We're good.
Okay, here we go. Item 7A, first five, Siskiyou Children and Families Commission. Come on up, ladies.
Hi, my name is Allison Skull. I'm from First Five Siskiyou. And this is Judy Falkinson and Karen Potts. And we are here to let you know about the 18th Annual Read Across Siskiyou 2025. And so this is a very big event, and this is in remembrance of Dr. Stephen Perlman. And so we do readings across the whole entire county. And if you would like to be somehow involved in reading, I know many of you have been readers for the Read Across Siskiyou, please let us know. And we would like to know by October 30th. And we are doing this in partnership with the Siskiyou County Library. I'm going to have Judy Washington speak for a little bit.
Good morning. I want to talk to you about partnerships that we have for First Five and how important they are to the work we try to present and the services we like to make available to families who have children from the age of 0 to 5. And First Five has a literacy vision, which is to collaborate with partners to support parents of children birth 0 to 5 in nurturing healthy development, love of learning, and enabling the children to enter kindergarten ready to learn. And some of the projects that we provide in the literacy component of the mission of First Five, one of our big offerings is the Dolly Parton Imagination Library, and I would imagine every one of you here have heard about it. And what it amounts to, for those who have not, Dolly Parton has been very generous with the way she distributes funds to be helpful. She has started the Imagination Library that has been in existence for some time. And a parent can fill out a registration form. They have a child or children below the age, up to the age of 5, and send it to our First Five office, which is in Mount Shasta, or whatever the registration form happens to indicate. And for each child, they receive a free book a month mailed to the child in the child's name, you know what I'm talking about. And that continues up until the age 5. So our impetus is to register as many children as we can in Siskiyou County between those ages. And at this point, per year for one child, the cost is $31. The parents do not pay for that. It's all free to the parents and to the family. So First Five partners with Delta Kappa Gamma, and we do everything we can to register every single kid we can possibly find out about. Anyway, and then as Delta Kappa Gammans, our job is to provide the monies for half of the book costs, and the state, as the last couple of years, provides the monies for the other half of the book costs. And at this point, and I would think there have been more children registered in the last week or so, we've already registered 1,169 children that will be new to the program. And some of the children in years past have already aged out, so we keep, every year, we keep having to replenish that number of children. And that's one of our projects. Another one is called Reach Out and Read, and this is in partnership with medical clinics. And the clinic personnel, the doctors, the nurses, prescribe books and encourage families to read together daily. And there are about 15 really well-replicated research studies that support how important it is to read to a little child from almost 2 days after they're born. And you mothers know that the more you talk with your child from the beginning, the more you read to them, that helps prepare them for what they're going to face when they reach kindergarten and what they need to achieve. Another one of our projects is called Read Across Siskiyou, which Allison referred to, starts at birth. And with the Fairchild Medical Guild and First Five partners with Delta Kappa Gamma, and the partnership with Delta Kappa Gamma and Fairchild Medical Centers expands outreach at local hospitals and clinics to provide and promote daily reading opportunities and resources to new parents. Another one of our projects is called Anytime Storytime, and we partner with the library. And Anytime Storytime is a partnership with the Siskiyou County Libraries. Delta Kappa Gamma provides the story times, quality children's books and resources, and parent trainings. And at any time, parents can also call a certain phone number, and their child can listen on the phone to someone reading a story. And that can happen 365 days a year. And that's a very popular project. Another one is our kindergarten readiness program, which we partner with Siskiyou County Office of Education and with Delta Kappa Gamma. Trainings and resources are provided to assist county kindergarten teachers to administer the readiness assessments that are really necessary for proper placement to start a child out in kindergarten and see what the child's needs are, developmentally where the child is, and what can be done to get them ready to start kindergarten. And then another project we do that we've done at the county fair every year, and I can't tell you how many. This has gone on for probably 20 years. In partnership with the Red Scarf Society for Performing Arts, First Five provides books and backpacks to be distributed to children of ages 0 to 5 at the county fairs. And there's also a concert that's going on at the same time that's enjoyed by everyone. And First Five provides the books and the backpacks, and the Red Scarf crew get them all ready to be distributed out there. We value our partnerships and realize that they make it at least, you know, possible for us to continue to do more and better work and more and better projects. And we just want to be able to provide the best services to the kids and families in Siskiyou County. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Judy. Karen Potts, First Five Siskiyou, Toronto Families Commission Executive Director. Thank you so much for having us here. And thank you to Supervisor Kopsev and Dr. Kalord and all the other, and Judy Washington and all the other commissioners for being county focused rather than individual focused. I just wanted to share before I end with a quote, and I'm so curious. Maybe I'll give you a little bit of time to maybe share your experience with Dolly Parton's Imagination Library. But before that, what I'd like to do is I'd like to share about what we've done in the last 15 weeks, or actually I would say probably 16 weeks now, over the last 16 weeks since July 1st, thanks to a partnership with Siskiyou County Probation, Human Services, and Behavioral Health, we've offered 28 different parenting education classes and workshops where 282 parents and caregivers, as well as 119 children, have benefited from these 28 parenting classes and programs. So we're working together to normalize parenting education and promotion of good parenting as a strategy for future taxpayers, in my opinion. The next activity is, again, over the last 15 weeks, we've offered 45 playgroups across Siskiyou County, where 365 parents and 343 children have participated. And I wanted to share with you about the success with our connection with the libraries. The community of Wairika, we really struggled for to get families to participate in play groups. And now it's become, because we moved the program to the library, it's become the place on Wednesdays for parents of children to attend. So it's a win-win effort between the library and First Five, so thank you. And then, so 28 parenting classes, 45 parent play groups, and then 11 family fun events. These are in addition to our participation in programs like the Museum Day. These are pop-up family fun events where there's family-friendly activities offered in the community to bring families together, to get them out of isolation, and to offer connections with other parents and children. So we had 11 family fun events with 303 parents and 539 children and youth who participated in the family events. This brings to 86 sessions of family support programs and family fun events with 950 parents who participated and 1,100 children. And why is this important? It's important because it shows the power of community and connection and leveraging of resources. There's no way First Five by itself could do this because our base funds from the state are around $250,000. And because of the collaboration and commitment of our community partners and county agencies, Office of Education, and the local schools, we're able to leverage and expand and be flexible to do what's best with the biggest impact in each one of the communities. So thank you, thank you, thank you for that. Thank you for always being a supporter. And thank you for allowing us to hold ourselves accountable. I'm proud to be the executive director of First Five Commission because it's not politics that guide us. It's doing the right thing for children and families and being fiscally and programmatically responsible. So I appreciate the commissioners, I appreciate you, and we appreciate your care for the children and youth in our communities. I want to end with, we just this morning got the survey results back for the kindergarten readiness, for the Imagination Library parent survey for the year. We had about 138 parents who completed the surveys. That's about, if we think about two children per family, about 300 parents of 300 children. And this is a quote from a mom that says, "My daughter is always excited to go to the mailbox because she's eager to receive her book from receive another book. I love that my daughter has been able to be exposed to literacy since birth. It's so nice to have a variety of books to read with her, and I'm so glad that this program has fostered the love of reading to her." Imagine, this is just one of many, many accolades that the families have offered. When we put more books in the hands of more children in our community, we see the results. It's anecdotal, but it actually is factual, because children who start kindergarten are more likely, who have benefited from First Five programs, are more likely to be successful, to score at the readiness level, and that trajectory continues to third grade and beyond. So thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to serve beyond 0 to 5, and thank you for honoring us by accepting the proclamation today. And I don't know if you want to share some. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for joining Imagination Library for your child. Thanks.
Thank you.
Oh, yes. And the book this year is Hugosaurus. So I thought I would just share a couple of things regarding what the American Medical Association recommends for media use, because I feel like a lot of the media use affects people reading. And when the adults are on their phone all the time, then children are always on their phone also. They model. So here's just, do not feel pressure to introduce technology early.
Stop use of devices on screens for 1 hour before bedtime. Do not let your children sleep with devices such as smartphones. Plan media-free times together, such as family dinners. Decide on media-free unplugged locations in homes, such as bedrooms. Engage in family activities that promote well-being, such as reading and talking with each other. Set a good example, turn off TV and put your smartphone on Do Not Disturb during media-free times with the family. So I just wanted to share that because I think it's so important to address that as parents and families. Thank you.
Thank you. Comments from the board?
I'll make the recommended motion. How's that?
Yep.
I'll second.
Okay.
Are
we ready for a vote?
We are ready.
Alrighty, Supervisor Valenzuela?
Absolutely.
Supervisor Halp?
Yes.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobbs?
Aye.
And Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
Thank you.
Are we supposed to do both pages?
Two, if you would please, okay. Yes. One to present and one for me to keep.
Okay.
Go back. Okay.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you so
please
much.
Please look for emails for to be guest readers, and all are welcome. Thank you.
Ladies. Okay, we're going to move on to item 8, departmental request, and we're going to jump to C&D so that Garrett can come up here.
You said C&D?
Correct.
Yes.
Morning, Board. Here I represent Deputy Director of Public Works. As a result of Public Works Department receiving concerns about the speed limit on Eastside Road, mile marker 0.00, mile post 9.72, traffic survey was completed with the findings supporting reducing the speed limit from 55 miles an hour to 45 miles an hour. I request the board approve and adopt the urgency ordinance amending section 3-4.609 to reduce the speed limit on Eastside Road from 55 to 45 miles an hour between 0.00 to 9.72. Happy to answer any questions.
I have a question. On the recommended motion, the final milepost is 11.74. Is that not correct?
Speed survey was only done until 9.72.
Is that going to affect the ordinance? It's in the title and it's in the ordinance itself.
That's a good question. I have nothing on here that shows it going 11 miles.
Through the chair, Angela Davis, County Administrator, will modify that 11.74. We'll strike that and correct it with the
9.72.
Not the 11.74.
Correct.
And is that something we can get today so the chair can sign? Thank you.
Perfect. Okay, any discussion? If not, do we have a motion?
Make a motion.
Second.
As modified?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Alrighty. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes.
Supervisor Howell? Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseth?
Aye.
And Supervisor Booker?
Aye.
Moving on to item D.
Okay. On September 22nd, we had all six districts combining crews, including warehouse, assistant warehouse managers, mechanics, pretty much everybody in public works throwing their hands in to help out on Kopko Road. Over a 5-day period, crews were able to lay a total of 1.4 miles of leveling courses between Climathon Bridge and the Old Hatchery. In addition, they were also able to fill a large amount of the abrupt potholes in between all the patches up to there.
Sounds like you did a great job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Public's already commenting, which is great. So
yeah.
Thank you.
Good.
And you
it's
look
a nice
tired.
Change of events.
And you look tired.
Yeah. Well, I didn't have to do it yet.
Yeah, yeah.
I should say everybody in public works but me.
That sounds like you did a wonderful job. Your crew worked extremely hard.
They did. They did a phenomenal job. It looks really good up there. And those are all parts we don't have to touch going on in addition. What? potholes, we'll put leveling courses over that, but the leveling courses are completed work.
Terrific. Thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you for the track record. Now, when we're here in the public meeting, the county never does what it says it's going to do.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, kudos to you.
That was a work. Now, you're going to have to live up to that standard all the time now. So
and now I set the bar.
You set the bar.
We've got work to do.
That's right. Any other comments from the board? We're going to move on. Thank you. Thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay, moving back to item 8A. We have a resolution adopting a comprehensive memorandum of understanding operating engineers local member. And that is going to be the stage. Wait. CAO. Item 8A. Are you going to talk to us about that?
Yes, we can. I was sidetracked just for a moment.
You were.
Confirming.
It's okay. We can wait.
Good morning, Chair O'Grin.
Good morning.
Members of the board, Angela Davis, County Administrator. Before you today are two resolutions pertaining to the Memorandum of Understanding by and between the County of Siskiyou and the Operating Engineers Local Union Number 3, also known as OE3. This MOU is a 3-year term with the effective date of October 26, 2025 through September 23rd, 2028. Within the MOU, there are a couple items that I would like to bring to light. The first is the compensatory time off is tearing down within the MOU and it expires September 23rd of 2028. Also, the MOU clarifies that this unit is moving away from CalPERS health benefits effective December of 2026 and moving to the Operating Engineers Public and Miscellaneous Employee Health and Welfare Fund effective plan year of 2027. And then also contained within the MOU are 3 salary increases of 3% each year of the term of the MOU for a total of 9% for this MOU. I would like to say thank you to all of those that were at the bargaining table on both sides for their collaboration and their efforts to reach this agreement before you today. Also, I would like to extend my appreciation to the board for your collaboration and your efforts and specifically your support, because I don't know if people are really aware of the fine balance that the board has to consider when trying to take care of our county employees, which you do incredibly well, and also the fiscal health of the county. So I just wanted to let you know that we appreciate your efforts in being able to achieve an agreement presented to you today. With that,
I'll make the recommended motion.
Second.
Call for vote, Jamie. All right. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yep.
Supervisor Howe?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseff?
Aye.
And Supervisor O'Grin?
Aye.
Thank you. Moving on to 8B, Health and Human Services, Behavioral Health Division, Dr. Collard.
Good morning, Chair O'Grin, members of the board, Sarah Collard, Health and Human Services. And I am here today seeking direction and possible action on a resolution authorizing our department to apply for and hopefully participate in the VCHIP program. And as we discussed the last time I was here, we are intending to apply for funds to build a new behavioral health clinic on a property adjacent to the existing clinic. Our request is for $27 million for this project. There's a 10% match required, which we have funding to put forward with a combination of the Behavioral Health Services Act funding, opioid settlement funding, and then the property which is owned by the county. It's a very small portion. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions from the board?
I'll make the recommended motion.
Thank you.
Second.
Okay. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes.
Supervisor Howe?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseff?
Aye.
And Supervisor O'Grin?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to item E, discussion possible direction with presentation summary legislative items relevant to the board.
Hello, Joanne Johnson, project coordinator for county administration. So I'll begin with an update on the emergency services grant funding, which was discussed at the August 12th board meeting. At that meeting, our director of emergency services, Brian Cianone, shared that California counties were at risk of not receiving OES preparedness grant funding from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security due to California's status as a sanctuary state. That issue has since been resolved, and the Department of Homeland Security has awarded all funding for these grants. For today's legislative update, I'll cover AB 263, AB 531, and AB 495. All of these were recently approved by the governor. Starting with AB 263, as Supervisor Kopsev already mentioned today, AB 263 extends emergency flow regulations in the Scott and Shasta River watersheds through January 1st, 2031, or until permanent flow requirements are adopted, whichever happens first. The Siskiyou Board of Supervisors has formally opposed this bill and has sent multiple letters expressing that opposition. AB 531 allows geothermal energy projects under 50 megawatts to bypass local permitting and apply directly through the state. A project can opt into state-level review through the California Energy Commission in lieu of local permitting. The Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors oppose this bill due to concerns over the loss of local control. And finally, I'll talk about AB 495. AB 495 includes several provisions, one of which expands the types of family members who may sign a caregiver's authorization affidavit. This affidavit allows a relative to make school and medical decisions for a minor when the parent is unavailable. Under existing law, only certain relatives, such as a grandparent, first cousin, or step-sibling, could complete the form. Beginning in the new year, AB 495 broadens that to include any adult related by blood, adoption, or affinity within the fifth degree of kinship. Supporters say the bill helps families stay together and ensures children can continue attending school and receiving care if their parents are suddenly unavailable, including in situations related to immigration, enforcement, or other emergencies. Opponents argue that this bill could weaken parental rights by allowing individuals beyond immediate family members to take on caregiving decisions without enough oversight, potentially leading to the misuse of the caregiver affidavit process. I've heard some concerns about whether this bill would allow someone to use this affidavit to check a child out of school. AB 495 specifically addresses school enrollment and medical consent, and it does not appear to change who can check a child out of school if they are already approved, if they are not already approved by the parent or guardian. Procedures vary by district, but parents or guardians typically provide a list of trusted adults at the start of each school year who are authorized to check out their child. I checked in with the county superintendent's office, and they shared that school districts generally follow recommendations from the California School Boards Association, and the next policy update from them is expected in December. The county superintendent's office is willing to continue engaging with us on this issue if needed, and the sheriff is here to answer any additional questions from the board. So that's the end of my update, and let me know if you have any questions.
Just a comment.
Go ahead.
I just have a comment on AB 263. Since we last talked, I've been working with a number of people to try and ascertain the actual flow requirements for these belly scraping flows. through a PRA, a private individual that I know did, to the state, we got some information. And I also looked at the information provided to our staff. For these flows. Unfortunately, the voluminous studies and extensive studies that are quoted in AB 263 use this information, but these are just descriptions of optimal habitat. It has nothing to do with whether or not our rivers are capable of these flows and what So that in itself, to me, looks like a political solution and not one that's founded in scientific foundation, if you will, because we don't even know if our rivers are capable of these things. And these studies were not done
here.
These studies were, as always, are always done on the coast, where there's a considerable amount more rainfall. And there's a huge difference hydrologically between a juvenile stream and its stream geomorphology and how it functions versus a mature stream close to the coast. And unfortunately, none of these studies recognize those differences and always put us in jeopardy. I really approach this with trepidation that we're headed down a route that we can never achieve, even without any irrigation in our rivers. That's my 2 cents today on AB 263.
The chair, so I'm going to tack on a bit here on 263 and then add a little bit on 495. On 263, former Supervisor Bennett actually reminded me of something that I don't know that we've thought about, but the e-regs were specific to fish water, I'll call it fish-centric water. Even though we weren't in a drought, the concern was that there wasn't enough water for fish. But now with dam removal and fish moving past these systems and going upriver, what's the consequence going to be of the returning numbers dropping in these two systems? And is that going to be now a new requirement for more water because we're not getting fish back in those systems, but they may be bypassing us and going upriver? I don't know how we deal with that, but that may become an element future. And then on 495, my biggest concern with that is consent of the parent. And while it doesn't appear that way, I'd want assurance from the school district that it's been portrayed that these forms can be just done online with four questions, and there's no investigation or basically little background investigation to who the person is and who is going to be the caregiver of this child. That the parent's consent would not be waived or bypassed. So that's my biggest concern with 495. If the school district can assure that parents' consent will be in place, then that's fine. But short of that, I would have difficulty with it.
Yeah, so I do want to note that the affidavit process, this specific caregiver authorization affidavit, has been around since 94, and it allowed kind of closer family members to fill out this form, and it is an extremely simple form.
It is or isn't?
It is a very simple form.
Yeah, it's four questions.
Yes,
yeah.
It's extremely short, and the person receiving the form is not held liable if the person filled out the form fraudulently. But our school districts, I talked to the superintendent, and she said that each district has their own policies about checking children out, and generally they always call the parents before. If someone comes by to check out the kid who's not on that list that's updated every year, then they would reach out to the parents, and they would not release the child just on the affidavit. I'm not sure what the policy is for as far as like the medical procedures concern about taking a kid to the doctor's office. But something to note is in the bill, it mentions routine medical care. And it also allows organizations to come up with their own standards of basically what policies and procedures they want to adopt around this. So it does provide some leniency. And the superintendent is willing to work with us, and we could see what policy updates come from the association I mentioned and coordinate with the school district on that.
Thank you.
So, just a comment follow-up from me. I support your suspicion as well. because this law begs a question. What wasn't working before,
yeah,
and what are you trying to
mm-hmm.
do?
Yeah.
Because what worked before was that the parent could easily write a note to the school that so-and-so is going to pick up my child today.
Right.
The other more legal questions I might have with this law is, how does just a piece of paper with four questions on it circumvent the family courts and custody issues that are going on in the judicial system? And, you know, I mean, are we sidestepping, there's restraining orders and all kinds of things associated with child custody that you may or may not even know about if you accept this form. So just, excuse me, but, you know, the state messing with my children is, it cuts to my core. You know, thank God mine are grown and out of the state. But I'd be scared to death if I were a parent.
And Angela Davis, through the chair, the sheriff may be able to have some input on this as he has reviewed this bill as well. So, if you don't mind, Sheriff.
While
he had some really good points.
While he's coming up, there's one section here to school officials, and it's item three. It says a seal or a signature of the court is not required. This form is not required to be notarized.
No.
So there's very little... accountability, I guess, is the bottom line.
So one of the questions, I think I heard you say that this can help with immigration issues, and that worries me just a little bit, because now we're getting into the possibility of parents being transported out of the country and kids being left here, so now they're maybe left with other families, and that's why this is coming up.
That's exactly right.
That's exactly, yeah.
Okay, so now we don't have a way to reach out to parents, because now they're totally unavailable, and now here are kids that are being displaced and left with other maybe family members that now have to be responsible for these children that don't have parents. And now we're being maybe left with extended family. Maybe. Or other types of caregivers. So this is just expanding this list of people that might be taking care of them.
That's correct. And this bill also does other things. Like, it allows for like a temporary guardianship through the courts, where the parents would still retain all their rights, but they could give temporary custody to someone else. And it also contains certain direction to schools about like what immigration information they can provide to officials and what they can request from families. So there's a lot in this bill. I just brought up the points that were of concern to some supervisors.
Well, let's not kid ourselves too much in that we all know, I mean, I'm not going to lie, when I was in school, it was pretty easy for somebody to write a letter and say, let Johnny out of school this afternoon, you know? I mean, it happened. I can't imagine that doesn't happen still to this day. Why is this going to be any different? If a kid wants to get out of school, they're going to figure out a way to get out of school. Without all of this. This worries me on so many levels. Come on up, Sheriff, tell us what you got.
Yeah, Sheriff.
Hello. Good morning, Sheriff LaRue.
Good morning.
Siskiyou County. I'm not the best
I guess, legislative analyst, but I did look into this because it is convoluted. It started off, in my opinion, really bad and got a little better, but essentially because it had non-relatives that could fill out this form and take people for health care and whatnot. It was very broad, right under the auspices that if, under immigration concerns, that if the parents were to be deported, the kids are left here, no one can care for them. So, however, when you read it, there are, like I said, many concerns. So, but within the law, what I see, there are some codes that are defined. It's actually the probate code that essentially for health care, it is routine health care and not like serious health care, surgeries and whatnot, unless it was like an emergency. So it doesn't give full authority for people that have these affidavits to do anything and everything with a child, but it's for a couple things. One of them deals with getting people pre-enrolled for school, immunizations and things like that. And the other part is basic healthcare routine, therapy, dental appointments. So it, at least it doesn't go, it's not a full spectrum to cover everything, including very serious surgeries that may be an issue. But I will say within the investigative steps that we have with anything, would be there could be potential for misconduct, as there has been in the past, and we could treat it the same way, and that we're looking for instances of perjury. If people fill out the form and they are not authorized, we would conduct an investigation as well as law enforcement and then submit charges for essentially felony perjury. We would work with CPS on that and schools. The schools need to be very vigilant on this, I think, and as mentioned, they have the authority to have a little bit stricter control over it for standards to determine that I don't just fill out a form and bring it in and say I'm taking somebody. So it's like most bills that are pushed through, it's get them in and then later we'll figure out how it all works. But I will say there are a couple sections that do deal with specifically the health care concerns and how they are mainly just routine.
Does this cover any financial aid information or applications for colleges or FAFSA, things like that, when these kids are trying to apply for colleges?
I didn't see anything in it related to financial aid.
Because who's... If that's all tax information and all that kind of stuff, and all of that information is family, direct family information and tax information, and those kids have to provide that kind of information when they do that. I wonder where that comes into play.
That's a great point. And it does further state, and yes, people could lie about this, that the child is under the care of the person that is filling out the affidavit. Mm-hmm. And that if the school determines that they are no longer living with that person, that it becomes void, essentially. Mm-hmm. So it is, in a sense, just a piece of paper. It's just going to take us being vigilant about it, as we have in the past, but it's just, it's new. There's additional relatives that could be completing these forms. And so I think it's a partnership between, it's going to be between the schools, law enforcement, and the healthcare institutions, that when they get these, they look at them a little bit closely. They are not penalized for providing care by just going off the form, but it doesn't say anything that they can't do a better job of looking into it. So I would stress that and try to maybe get the people involved in our community just so we can have a discussion about how we can vet these better.
Anything else?
Yeah, I always look at any law, not so much what the normal person is trying to do, but how it will be used nefariously.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that's my trepidation. I mean, you just mentioned routine health care. Routine health care can be life-threatening if you don't know the child's particular situation. You brought up immunizations. I use one of my kids as an example. I have one kid that's deathly allergic to part of the DPT vaccination. Now, if I had a grandparent or someone else who thought I wasn't vaccinating my kid, picked my kid up and took him to the to a place to get that vaccination, it would have put that child in anaphylactic shock.
Yes.
And no one knows that but the parent. That, this is why it's wrong.
Oh yeah, valid concerns, absolutely.
Well, and I think there's a new law mandating vaccinations.
Yeah.
So there's no exemptions any longer. I don't know if that's taken place yet, but it's at least in the works. But there you go. It just goes to what Supervisor Howland's talking about.
And there is a piece about custody that, if I read it correctly, all 900 pages of it felt like, but it does mention that it doesn't diminish any of the or remove the custody. You know, the parents still have custody of the child. They're just basically the people filling out the affidavit are acting as a caregiver in that moment. It's supposed to be a temporary.
But the
thing.
Parent doesn't fill out the affidavit.
Mm-mm. No.
No. That, again, that's
right.
Like, so anybody can do
yeah.
that.
Right. Yeah, you go online, you get the form, fill out its
yeah.
name, birth date, and that person's name, and I forget what the last one is, but it's there isn't
yeah,
much information.
There's a couple boxes saying that I've spoken to the parents or I couldn't speak to
okay.
the parents, which
right.
isn't really helpful.
Right.
Yeah.
I would not.
I mean, if it was coming from the parent, that would
that's
be a different
thing.
Thing.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was poorly written.
Yeah.
And it was just blown through,
yeah.
so.
Yeah. Keep us posted. Hopefully the school district will adopt policy that will keep parents in the proper place.
And if I have it correctly, in January, the Attorney General's office, I believe, is supposed to push out some guidelines. Don't know what those look like, but that should at least help with some of these conversation pieces, because right now there's nothing. It's the typical, the bill starts, but then figure out how it works.
Yeah.
And so we're too early, but I share your concerns, and I will let you know what I hear.
Would you please come back
yeah.
and give us more information on this as it develops and keep us posted? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Through the chair,
yes.
Angela Davis, County Administrator. If we may, we can return to item 8C. The change that was requested for the milepost marker to 9.72, it actually should be milepost 11.74, which was on the agenda. So I know that we have amended motions. I'm not sure if we need to now amend that motion to the original
unamended.
Recommended motion. Please.
So the words were wrong and the written is correct?
Correct.
Okay.
There you go.
How do we end
this? So I think we want to go back to item
8C.
8C. Mm-hmm. And then we would take a vote to rescind the prior vote and use the recommended motion for
correct.
A new vote.
That sounds right.
For
yeah.
Correct. Thank you.
Okay, so...
So may we do those in two steps?
Two steps, yes. Motion to rescind would be the first one.
Okay.
Does it have to be by the motion maker at that time, or can be...
I believe everybody voted in favor of it, so anyone is eligible to make the motion.
All right,
okay.
I'll make the motion.
To rescind,
to rescind.
First.
Second.
And then Supervisor Harris. Okay. So Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yep.
Supervisor Howe.
Aye.
Supervisor Harris.
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsev.
Aye.
And Supervisor Okra.
Aye.
And then the next motion would be the one that's actually on
the
agenda.
The original recommended
correct.
Motion.
I'll make the original recommended motion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Second.
All righty. Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yes.
Supervisor Howe.
Aye.
Supervisor Harris.
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsev.
Aye.
And Supervisor Okra.
Aye.
Thank you.
Perfect. So we can get that one signed, correct?
Correct.
Excellent. Okay, now we're moving on to 8F, appointments in lieu of election.
Alrighty. Paperwork here. Yes, these are appointments in lieu of election that were continued from the last board meeting. We did make some appointments that are listed in Exhibit A, so that one is not valid. I just need to find my notes for the others. Okay. All right. We could start with Grenada Sanitary District. I had received, and I forwarded on to Supervisor Cobb-Siff, that the four current members, Frank Cena, Kenneth Keyes, William Haars, and Darren Joling, are interested in reappointment. I double-checked, and the terms would be Kenneth Keyes would be a full term, and then the remaining three would be the short terms. And at this point, they have one vacant position unless they had somebody else interested. Okay, so that's me.
You want to act on that one?
Yes, if we could.
So I would motion to reappoint those members.
The four, okay.
Second.
Thank you. If we could, Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yep.
Supervisor Help.
Aye.
Supervisor Harris.
Aye.
Supervisor Cobb-Siff.
Aye.
And Supervisor Ober.
Aye.
Okay, I had no others besides those that came in to my office.
Anything from Gazelle Fire?
No.
Do we still have time on these, or is this the last day?
My understanding is as long as their appointments are made before they take their office that first week of December, so we do have the November 18th being the absolute last one.
We haven't heard from Tunsberg Fire?
Mm-mm.
Okay, I'll follow up with that.
Okay. We also had COPCO Fire Protection, but you had mentioned issues with...
had a snafu with my email, and so I'll... if we could push it off till the 18th of November, and I will
get this info to you again.
People dialed in.
So Dunsmuir, no, I have not heard. Gazelle Fire was actually taken care of with Rebecca Bridwell and Christy Beck last.
It was, okay.
So that one's Gazelle's done. And Grenada Fire, we still need to do.
Oh, that's the other. Okay.
That's the other one. Hornbrook Fire, Callahan Water District, and Sawyers Bar Water District. Nothing? Okay. So, yeah, I think our drop-dead date is going to be then the 18th to be the very last time we can get those taken care of.
Okay. That's that for that. Moving on. Local emergency-related impacts resulting in lower climate dam removal declared Resolution 2451. Mr. Chenon. Mr. Dean.
Good morning, Board of Supervisors. Ryan Schneider, Director of Emergency Services. Item for you is to either extend or terminate the local emergency regarding the Klamath Dam removal. Pending any questions?
What's your recommendation?
My recommendation would be to terminate, being that we haven't had any concerns from the population or local population. Yes, they are. Fish are starting to return back in the water system. There's still turbidity in the water. Anybody who's driven over the river can see that. But otherwise, who was here? Rick Dean will work on the well part of it.
Supervisors, Rick Dean, Community Development Director, just to give you an update on the well situation. The mitigation fund is no longer in place, obviously.
There were 10 applications. Is it empty? Is it empty?
I don't know the answer to that, but it's no longer active for John Smith.
No, they got it. Whatever they have left went back into their money.
Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I mean, I'm just curious. I mean, I would have thought we'd have had information on that, but.
Yeah. There was a deadline for all that. So. Just to review in summary, there were 10 total applications. 9 wells were addressed, 3 were deepened, 6 new wells were put in place, 3 of which were positive for arsenic and may be treated. 1 well is going to be shared with storage. The 10th well on Avery Bessett Road is basically settled out. The well was not drilled. So there's that faction, pretty well. A couple other things that are still in play. We had an initial meeting with Mort McMillan and team regarding the floodplain analysis. So we were initiating that conversation. Initially, FEMA was not available due to the government shutdown. However, we're bringing them into the table with staff to make certain that their methodology is suitable for FEMA. And anticipating a 2-year process to get a floodplain evaluated. Third and final thing, the works of installing 10,000 gallon fire suppression tank up there up at Patricia. Still working through the details with our building department as far as the tank install. That pretty much wraps up our CDB's involvement for the damn conversation at this point.
Doesn't sound like you want to terminate yet.
I'm okay with it. I think, to extend it out because of the floodplain analysis, I don't know that that's proven. We'll take care of this tank issue shortly. And as far as the well's going dry, they've been addressed to this point. So,
I guess the only piece I'm still concerned about is we got a fearful public meeting ring or at public aid, CRE.
KRC.
I always get it wrong. It's too close to some other things. Anyway, it had a significant financial loss in visitor days and visitation, recreational use of the OHP facility there. And I told them that with our emergency in place, they need to advocate for a recognition at the governor's level so that would trigger some of the SBA stuff, and reimbursement pieces that might be available to them. But I don't think any of that's happened. So, that's unfortunately one of the things that's kind of fallen by the wayside with this. And I don't know when their recreational stuff is going to pick back up, but it was. They shared with me that they were off almost 80% in rec revenue this year. Apparently, our emergency deck isn't influencing that. So, all right.
So, what is the concern level of all the large woody debris that has now been placed up there in quantities that far surpass what would normally be there? And what are we looking at in, a flood stage year as far as what that would do downriver? I mean, are we looking at that? Are we monitoring that? They've taken trees that don't belong in an area, stuffed them all over the place. I mean, if you get in the Iron Gate footprint, you can visibly look around and see nothing but junipers and brush, and now we have pine logs and cedar logs that are sitting on silt. You know, there's no anchoring. There's nothing to anchor to. So in a flood stage year, what does that look like to downriver infrastructure? What does that look like as far as log jams and flooding? That's continued to be a major concern of mine. I mean, with the right kind of flood year, that kills everyone downriver. So, I'm maybe wait another winter before we lift this because we don't know what this looks like. I mean, they've put thousands of logs into an area that has nothing to hold them in place.
If I may, through the chair, to answer that question, I think that's a valid concern. We saw significant water push through last year when they did that. There was an emergency flush. My concern with keeping the current state of emergency is that it has no teeth with the state. And the state has already said that they're not going to support it. The governor's already said that they're not going to support it. If we have a water event, it would, for my department, we would write a new state of emergency that would have teeth that would relate back to that. So by keeping this one into place, it's basically like, oh, look at what we did 2 years ago. But we've already said that that's not worth anything. Here's a new one that addresses the issues that are current, if we do, God forbid if we have that. And secondly, that can actually go back and apply for CDAA. And we can also attack the lack of FEMA and floodplain mapping that we have seen right now. So I think I see the point in wanting to keep it, but this one doesn't have any teeth where if anything comes forward, moving forward in our future, then we'll push a new state of emergency. We've done this before, and then ask for our CDA, because in that one we asked and we didn't get anything. So moving forward, we can ask for CDA, we can address the concerns that we have from that we've already have, and we're going to monitor this. We're looking at this. It's on our board every day. We see this. We see the concerns that we have through the community. But as of right now, to keep this one in place, my opinion is not going to do anything in the future. In the future, we'll write something that, hey, look what you guys did, and now this is the effect of it.
Yeah, I agree with that. Because we're not getting anywhere with it. But the other reason I agree with that is that with it in place, I'm not able to make the case about what we're facing as far as fish recovery in both Shasta and Scott. And as long as this is in place, it's something that overclouds that issue, if you will. So I would make a move to rescind it.
Terminated. Got that? Thank you.
Anything else?
Second.
Go ahead.
We're good? I got two. Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yep.
Supervisor Howe.
Aye.
Supervisor Harris.
Aye.
Supervisor Kopseth.
Aye.
And Supervisor Ogren.
Aye, with a comment before you leave. I haven't had a chance to make my comment. I agree, and I appreciate your comments, Mr. Shinoni, because I kind of feel like we're letting our constituents down a little bit by giving up on this, but that's a perfect point in that you're right. We don't, it doesn't hold it doesn't hold any water anymore. It doesn't have any teeth. You know, it's been there forever. We didn't have a lot of traction with it to begin with. And if something, and that was exactly the reason why I was thinking we needed to keep it, because here we are yet another year. There's still a lot of issues that we're going to come up against. And this is supposed to be a wet year, and we're going to look at some more issues. But with that, it's a whole new ballgame. We need to look at it that way. So perfect. I think this is a great way to look at it. But again, I don't want our constituents to think that we're giving up and that we've done something to just let them down. We keep moving forward. We keep supporting them and doing everything we can to keep our monitoring up, keep working to, you know, do everything we can to, you know, help revitalize our community and support them every way we can. I just don't want to let anybody down. So, thank you. Okay. At ease. Yes. Okay. From there, let's recess as the Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors convene as the Flood Control and Water Conservation District and move into public comment.
What? I believe they took a verifying that the vote was completed.
We did, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just made my comment after.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Public comment for Flood Control and Water Conservation District. Any in the room? Any online?
Showing them online.
Move into minute approval for October 20th.
No corrections.
October 7th.
Move to approve.
Second.
All righty. Director Valenzuela.
Yep.
Director Howe.
Aye.
Director Harris.
Aye.
Director Kopseth.
Aye.
And Director Ogren.
Aye. We'll adjourn as the Flood Control and Water Conservation District and convene as the Siskiyou Power Authority and ask for public comment in the room. Any online?
Showing none online.
And we have consent agenda.
Move to approve.
Second.
Call the vote.
All right. Excuse me. Director Valenzuela.
Yep.
Director Haupt.
Aye.
Director Harris.
Aye.
Director Kopseth.
Aye.
And Director Ogren.
Aye. And we'll move to adjourn.
Transfer of funds.
Oh, we got one
transfer
more.
Of funds. One more.
Move to approve.
Second.
Call for vote.
All All right. Director Valenzuela?
Yep.
Director Hupp?
Aye.
Director Harris?
Aye.
Director Kopsev?
Aye.
And Director Ogren?
Aye. We will adjourn as Siskiyou Power Authority and convene as in-home supportive services, public authority. Public comment in the room? Public comment online?
Showing none online.
Minute approval, October 7, 2025?
No corrections.
Move to approve.
Second.
Call for vote.
All right. Director Valenzuela?
Yep.
Director Howe?
Aye.
Director Harris?
Aye.
Director Kopsev?
Aye.
And Director Ogren?
Aye. We will adjourn as in-home supportive services, public authority, and reconvene as the Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors and move into minute approval for October 7th.
No corrections?
Thank you.
Approve.
Second.
I'm sorry, was that help?
Yes.
Thank you. All righty. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yep.
Supervisor Howe?
Aye.
Supervisor Harris?
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsev?
Aye.
And Supervisor Ogren?
Aye. Let's take 5 minutes before we move into public hearings.
Thank you. Yes.
Yes.
Got a few more coming.